handbill addressed to all true-hearted Scotsmen to restore James Francis Edward, James the Eighth, to the throne of England, 1st January 1715. To all true-hearted Scotsmen, whether soldiers or others, when our brave and ancient nation is like to be engaged in war, I think it is every man's business to consider that whatever may be said in defence of soldiers of fortune fighting in foreign wars, when perhaps it is neither so easy nor so much the duty of strangers to consider the quarrel, yet no man can, with any show of reason, plead the lawfulness of making war a trade when it comes to be civil or domestic. In this case, 'tis only the lawfulness of the cause and the good of his country that can warrant any man to engage in it. For if he embark on the wrong side, from a principle of interest or any selfish consideration, every slaughter he makes of a contrary party is a fresh murder, and if he falls himself, he goes to the devil for hire. By the Earl of Mar's manifesto, we find that the present quarrel turns upon these two points: be restoring our lawful natural king and the dissolving of the Union, both which should be seriously weighed by all Scotsmen, being of the utmost importance both on the score of conscience, hour, and interest. As to the restoring to his throne King James the Eighth, whatever some men's interest may prompt them to say or do, yet I'm confident that in our secret thought we are agreed that he is our lawful, rightful sovereign. And we all know that he is the undoubted lineal heir by blood and descendant of the ancient race of our Scottish kings, whose ancestors in a direct line have swayed the sceptre in our hereditary monarchy for many generations. A prince upon whom the crown is entailed by the fundamental laws of our country, and to whom, even before he was born, we have often sworn allegiance and fealty by those oaths given former kings, by which we bound ourselves not only to them, but to their lawful heirs and accessors. In bar to all this, on pretence of some illegal actings by the late King James in a giddy and tumultuary time, a meeting, nameless in law and unknown in practice, assembled without any legal call, neither electors nor members being duly qualified, and where forfeited traitors got leave to sit and vote. I say, this meeting, which they called a convention of estates, took upon them to forfeit their sovereign, and by an act as contrary to law as to reason and Christianity, declared the throne vacant, and then settled the crown on the Prince of Orange, by which, and the subsequent train of illegal acts, the present possessor fills the throne, whose right must stand or fall with the validity or nullity of that meeting. We all know that in our neighbouring nation, in King Charles II's reign, when the Bill of Exclusion was debated, many learned prelates and great lawyers warmly asserted that the lineal succession was so blended with the Constitution that it was above the power both of King and Parliament to alter it. And surely it has at least as strong and unalterable a foundation here, being so riveted to our policy, established by our law, confirmed by solemn oaths, and strengthened by a prescription of 2,000 years. But whether a King and Parliament had power to alter the succession or not, never any man before, except the rump Parliament, pretended that a meeting without a king, or without any authority from him, had power to make void the throne, which was, in effect, to unhinge the monarchy and raise the constitution from the very foundation. They who contrived the scheme, both here and in England, were so sensible of the weakness of their arguments to satisfy the minds of the people that they were forced to bring in a supplemental topic, the illegitimacy of the Prince of Wales's birth. So impudent a piece of slander that, however serviceable it was to their interest to make it appear, and however frequently challenged to do so, they never durst bring it to a fair trial. Things being thus, pray, gentlemen, consider whether you are safe, either in conscience or honour, to draw your swords for so precarious and ill-founded an establishment. I should be unwilling to think that in the present case soldiers should consider the justice of the cause less than other men, because they are more concerned than others, being the chief actors in any blood and slaughter that may ensue. And he that sheds the blood of his fellow subjects and countrymen, probably his brethren and nearest relations, in a cause that he cannot show to be just, will give the world but a slender opinion, either of his religion or good sense. As you would then approve yourselves to God, the world, and yourselves to be Christians, men of honour, and Scotsmen, consider seriously, before you draw your swords, whom you are to fight against, and what you fight for.